Welcome to Back Pass World Cup Countdown Show. And if you're not aware, this show, we're going to look back at World Cups in the past, from the past to the latest one, which was in 2018. In our last episode, we covered World Cup 1990, Italia 90. So in case you missed that, you can always catch us up on Spotify and YouTube. This episode today is going to cover USA 94. It's the first ever World Cup I watched back in 1994, and I'm really excited for the show, of course, but I think my guests are equally excited, so let's bring them on the show. So first up, we got our friends, just a friend from the Bola Bola show, Mr. Stephen John. How are you doing, Stephen?
Hey, Ras. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me on board.
I'm doing really well. Nice having you on board. Actually, we did the show on Euros, remember? Missing Elwin and Bala as well. Hope they are well. And hopefully they would listen to this show as well. Mm-hmm. And then we have another returning guest on the show, Mr. Hari. We covered the Liverpool episode with him. And Hari from Plot, Malaysia. So, Hari, welcome back to Back Pass with Russ. How are you doing?
Russ, thanks for having me on the show, man. Doing good. Excited to be on your show again. We've collaborated quite a bit recently. I think you've been on the Plot as well with some really good insights about Man United when they were in the slump with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So that was a good time to have you on. But excited to be on the show, man, especially since we're talking about a subject that's very, very close to my heart.
Yeah, very, very close and dear to our hearts. Okay, so guys, let's start off with your memory of USA 94. We don't talk about the games, we don't talk about matches, about players, about any, you know, standout controversial moments. Just your memory, what age you were at that time, what were you doing in life, you know, that kind of memories. Okay, we start off with that. Stephen, you go first.
Okay, I was 14 years old at the time, so in case you're wondering how old am I, you can do the maths, no problem for me. nothing to hide it. Well, I was living a nomadic life between staying with my grandma in Shah Alam and my parents in Klang. It was a wonderful time. And I remember that the World Cup started during our school midterm holiday. So I was able to catch some of the earlier games without much interruption from anyone in the house. Because as you know, when you're still in school, staying up late is just not an option under normal circumstances. Yeah. However, in my case, because at that time I was attending afternoon school, so afternoon school session only starts like after like 2 o'clock. So I was able to catch whatever games that took place at about 11 p.m., which is the early fixture, and 7:30 a.m., which is the night fixture in the U.S. So that's pretty much about me at that point of time in life.
Okay. Yourself, Hari?
So I'm going to give you my age now as well. I was about 10 years old at that time. 1994, that was good memories, man. So I was 10 years old, I was schooling. My dad was working abroad at that time, so it was just me, my mum, and my sister. And it was my first World Cup, man. It was the first World Cup I saw. I was schooling, so the timing was a bit, it was odd, obviously. It's different from the World Cups that we've had in Europe for a large number of years, for example. As Sivan mentioned, there were games that was late at night, and then there were these early morning games at 7:30 Malaysian time or so. So I used to catch them over the weekends, especially, you know, on a Saturday morning, you know, you're not schooling, you get up, you watch the 7:30 game. I caught some of the late night games on the weekends as well. So, yeah, it was good times, man. Really, really good times.
Yeah, I was also 10 years old at that time. And yeah, correct. What you say is true, Sivan. It was the June holidays here in Singapore as well. So, I mean, I think Malaysia, Singapore school holidays probably coincide. Their timings were pretty similar. So we would have school holidays at about the same time. And yeah, during school holidays, of course, you could just watch any game you like. But I always catch that, you know, 7:30 a.m. kickoff, because by then you would have woken up. Just nice timing. You would have woken up, watched that game, you know. Nobody's going to disturb you and say, hey, why are you waking up so early? And especially because school holidays, nobody going to say that. But of course, as the tournament progressed, then school restarted and then we had all that issues. So you had to sneak out of the room and watch. And there was also another issue I remember I had. Because back then, I didn't have like an alarm clock to wake me up for matches. So I had to rely on my body clock to wake up and watch. So sometimes there were some matches where I would wake up and I'd say, oh, damn, the kickoff has gone past already. I'll just rush out to the living room and on the TV and watch it. And yeah, so that is some of my memories I have of USA 94.
Especially some of the, like you said, the later stage games, right? They were at about, I think the 7:30 games kind of disappeared after a certain point in time.
After the group stage and all, yeah.
And then it was these 2 o'clock, 3 a.m. games and all again. So yeah, I was relying on my body clock a lot of the time as well.
Yeah, true, correct, right? We didn't have like phone alarms and all that. And also if for example, you're 10 years old, you had an alarm and you kept it on, and the thing rang, whoever's around you, the elders around you, they will be like, why is your alarm on? And they'll come and you get a scolding. You know what's going to happen. Yeah. Especially in our kind of households, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I was lucky that because my dad, because me and my dad, we used to sleep in the hall, knowing that it's the World Cup. And so he was kind enough to wake me up just in time before, especially on weekends for that 3 o'clock games. Okay. I remember there were games at about 3 o'clock. I think this is what considered like in USA, probably the evening or afternoon fixture, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Yeah, about 12 hours behind.
Yeah, I mean,
more or less. Yeah, it was about 12 hours. Yeah, more or less.
Okay, so talking about USA, how much do you guys know about USA as a football team? I'll start with Hari.
I didn't know anything about the USA as a football team back then. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, so the first time I was watching them, but yeah, I thought they were quite impressive, man. They had a reasonably good tournament. They made it out of the group, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Yeah. At that point in time, you know, the groups were, I think there were more teams as well.
The top three could qualify. That means the top two qualify automatically and the best third place team is qualified.
I think the four out of the best third place teams or something qualify, isn't it? Yeah. And the US got out of the group. So that was not an easy group as well. It was quite a tough group, if I remember correctly. So they got out of the group. And then they faced Brazil in the second round and then narrowly lost the eventual champion just by one goal or nil. So I thought pretty impressive tournament from the Americans, actually. Put on a good game.
Yeah.
I mean, put on a good show, I thought, as the host from a footballing standpoint. I remember vividly, right? I remember a couple of names as a young kid, man. One was Alexis Lalas.
Yeah,
obviously everyone remembered him for his hairdo, hairstyle, etc. The centre back, and I remember Eric Winalda. I think he was a striker for them, wasn't he?
Yeah.
At that time, he was a top striker for them. So,
yeah,
those are a couple of names. That Kobe Jones, I think, was playing for them as well.
Correct.
So those are the few that ring a bell in my head, man, at that point in time. But yeah, pretty impressive. Obviously, one thing I've got to mention: that was a bad memory from the US point of view. None of their fault, obviously, but. Wasn't it against them that the Colombian Escobar, wasn't it, who scored that their own goal? And then obviously after that, what happened, everyone knows he was murdered back in Colombia. So yeah, that was a sad thing that came out of that tournament. And unfortunately, you link the US to that, right? Because they were the ones against whom he scored their own goal.
True. And for me, USA leading up to the World Cup, I mean, I'm sure at that age, we'd have been watching Hollywood movies. So, a lot of mention in Hollywood movies about basketball, about American football, ice hockey. But you never ever hear them speak about football the way we know it. It's soccer for them, but for us, it's football. And I was probably quite curious, so I asked my dad, like, why don't they, you know, speak about football? You know, why is it always all these other sports? And then he told me, you know, Americans don't really like football and don't really play the game and all. And leading up to the tournament, of course, you know, I'm not sure if you guys did this, but I bought top deck cards. So World Cup USA 94 cards. So I collected those cards. And then from there, I got to know some of the American players. And like what you've mentioned, some of them, Tony Miola is another one in goal. John Hawkes used to play for Sheffield Wednesday in the English League. So, yeah, these were some names that you've mentioned. Okay, Steven, yourself, your memory of USA before the World Cup.
Well, I only remember, I mean, I took note interest in them probably a year earlier when they hosted the US Cup.
US Cup,
it was sort of like a World Cup precursor. Like nowadays, what we have the Confederation Cup. Yeah. Back then, I don't think the Confederation Cup was not really, maybe came to existence, but it wasn't really a tournament yet. So what these host nations will do, they organize their own mini tournament. And I remember USA had England, Germany, Brazil as part of the teams they invited, showcasing that they are ready for the World Cup. And I remember from that tournament, that's where I got to know players like what Hari mentioned, Alexi Lalas, for his rock star look, you know, ginger, long hair, goatee and all that.
Easy, yeah.
Mm. And of course, you know, other names like Ronaldo Hawks, Ernie Stewart, Thomas Dooley, and Tony Miola for that matter. And of course, you know, the other important character in the US team is the coach, Bora Milutinovic.
Yes,
has, you know, one of the, when it comes to World Cup, I think he's quite iconic, because he coached, I think, about five different national teams, five consecutive World Cups with different national teams. So, and leading up to the tournament, I think there were two pertinent questions about the US team, whether they can make it out of the group stage. As what Hari mentioned, it's a very tough group. You had a Colombia team that Pele himself said they're going to win the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Colombian teams, you would remember very well, Steven.
Of course. Argentina. Definitely. We'll come back to that later.
We'll come back to that later. But that one, yeah. That's an example of why Pele said that.
And but obviously, I mean, to sidetrack a bit, Pele is the worst predictor in world football.
Yeah, correct.
And then you had a Romania team, the Golden Generation Romania team.
Yeah, correct.
And then you had a Swiss team managed by Roy Hodgson. I mean, they were also, a generation of players. Yeah. So it was a very tough question whether USA can pull it out, can get out of the group stage. Because 4 years earlier in Italia 90, I really took notice about what happened to them at the time. But as we know today, they lost all their group stage games and, you know, the support wasn't really there for them, even back home in USA. If you go back and read some of the books or some of the stories that have been written about United States at that time, it's quite common that they can play a friendly match against Mexico in Los Angeles in a 40,000 capacity stadium, but 399,000 people, they're actually supporting Mexico, not the US team. That's how underwhelming their support is at that time. So these two pertinent questions were, you know, there were a lot of debate going around how this US team will be able to handle the World Cup. Will they be able to turn out? Will they be able to produce results? Will there be support for them? But I guess at the end of the day, looking back now, both questions were answered. They made it out of the group stage, which was fantastic. And I think overwhelmingly, Americans who, prior to the World Cup, there was an article that says that 60% of the country had no idea they're hosting the World Cup. Can you imagine that? we're talking about a World Cup, man. 60% of your country don't even know. They never have no clue what's going on. But you know, thank God they came out in numbers. The stadiums were full, the support was there for them, and they did well.
Yeah, I think I was also rooting for them. I managed to watch quite a number of their games, and I ended up rooting for them as the underdog, as you know, is what you've said, as the underdog team. And also, it's something interesting. They played the first ever World Cup match in an
indoor stadium.
Yes, in an indoor stadium, correct.
Pontiac Silverdome.
Against Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you answered both my questions quite nicely. So now let's get to the surprise teams of this World Cup. I'm sure there were a few surprise teams, which makes this World Cup special because of these surprise teams. Who would you like to name, Steven?
Well, the first name on top of my list is Saudi Arabia.
They
made their debut in the World
Cup.
That
is a surprise team that not many people remember.
Exactly. And They were in a group together with Belgium, Netherlands, and Morocco. So, you know, their odds were stacked against them. But somehow or other, they came out of that group, made it to the last 16, the only Asian representative in that knockout stage.
Yeah.
And of course, thanks to a fantastic solo goal by Said Al Oeiran against Belgium. What an amazing goal that was. And I think overall, Asia did pretty well. Even South Korea, even though they didn't make it out of the group stage, but I think their results were very respectable. Their first game against Spain, I remember that was a 7:30 fixture.
What a game that was, man.
Yes, brilliant. They came back from 2-0 down to snatch a draw. That was their best result at that time in their World Cup history. And they got a draw against Bolivia, against Germany, you know, even though they were losing by 3-0, but
they
managed to pull back. I mean, they almost came back 3-2. So, I mean, for Asia, I would say it's one of the I mean, prior to the 2002 World Cup, this was one of their best showing in World Cup. Other surprise, of course, you know, Bulgaria. I don't know whether I think I mentioned this to you, Russ, on Twitter, that prior to their game against Greece, which they won 4-0, they haven't won a World Cup fixture in God knows how long. I think it goes all the way back to 1974 or something. So even though they have consistently qualified one or two occasions, but they never won a game. And you know, that Greece game was the turning point for them, I think, you know, embarking on a magical journey all the way to the semi-final. And then of course you have Nigeria, you know, they following the footstep in Cameroon's footstep from Italia 90, showcasing that Africa is improving. You know, what happened to Cameroon 4 years ago is no fluke. Africa as a whole is improving. You know, they are a force to be reckoned with. Very unlucky not to lose to Italy, thanks to the magical Roberto Baggio. And I think to some degree, even Sweden and Romania were surprising teams, considering how they were 4 years ago. These are my surprise teams.
Hari, is it right to say that you've got a soft spot for Nigeria?
Yes. I was going to say that, man. I do have a soft spot for Nigeria, and they were the side I was rooting for. The World Cup. So I spent, as you probably know, I spent about 4 years in Nigeria growing up as a kid. So I just came back, actually. I just come back from Nigeria in 1990 or 1991. And like I said, this is my first World Cup. And I'm actually going to say Nigeria were not a surprise team in that tournament because they had a golden generation at that point in time. That was a Nigerian golden generation. And in my opinion, if not for Baggio's intervention right at the death, they would have gone on and made maybe even the semi-finals. They were that good a side. They had talent all across the pitch. They gave the Argentinians a good go with Maradona playing for them as well. So very impressive Nigerian side, right? There's Rashidi Yakini, who was a brilliant striker at that point in time. I mean, the memorable celebration he did, right?
The first
ever Nigerian goal in the World Cup. And then there was Amokachi, there was Amuniki, there was Ikpeba, I think, at that point in time.
I don't think Ikpeba was there.
Yet.
Okocha was there. Okocha was very young.
Finidi George got a cracker of a goal as well. He was there.
Peter
Rufai.
Playing for Ajax. Sande Olise.
Peter Rufai, there, like what Steven said.
Quality outfit they were. And I think they were an outstanding team and went out to a very... I mean, I think they went out to brilliance of Roberto Baggio and nothing else, like, you know. And surprise package-wise, Shivan's probably named all the sides. I was going to say Saudi Arabia, classy outfit, side aware and scores the goal of the tournament. And I actually think, you know, that goal should be up there with the Maradona goal. I mean, the 1-2 goals of the tournament. It doesn't get enough credit, maybe because he was not a very well-known name and he's not a well-known name, but anyone who hasn't seen the goal, go watch the goal. It's a classy solo goal from a wide run from his own half, right? So they were a surprise package. I thought Romania, surprise package in the fact that they made the quarterfinals. Bulgarians, of course, were the absolute surprise package. The Swedes to a large extent as well. Very, very good side. So yeah, those were possibly the sides I was going to say as well.
For me, Romania, I think I would... like to expand on Romania because I didn't know much about Romania, but watching Romania play in that tournament, they took my breath away. I think Georgi Hagi, especially.
Georgi Hagi, man. Till today, I rate him as one of the best players. I mean, I've seen watching, you know, as football, right? And I don't think he gets enough credit. I think also he's one of the greats. I mean, he played for a short spell, I think, with both Madrid and Barcelona.
Not as
successful, but he had a great time at Galatasaray. And the ability this guy had was out of the world, man. An absolute brilliant left foot, wonderful left foot. So, yeah, for me, I still rate him very, very highly, man. If I was to put a team out of the best 11 players ever, I would always have Georgi Hagi in there because it was my first experience watching the World Cup and I thought he was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, exactly true. And they had like Ili Dumitrescu, who else they had? Georgi Popescu.
Rodiciu playing at that time?
Florin Rodiciu,
Rodiciu was playing as well. Florin Rodiciu, So that Romania team was the first one that surprised me. Sweden, not so much actually, you know, because prior to this World Cup, at Euro 92, they had already, you know, caused a bit of a stir. So, you know a bit about Sweden. I knew a bit about Sweden already, but I didn't expect them to reach the semi-final, of course. But that's where they went. And also, they didn't lose by much. very narrow margin defeat to Brazil.
Brazil, yeah.
Yeah, and so kudos to Sweden. Sweden were actually the highest scoring team in the World Cup, this World Cup. Yeah.
I mean, and the Bulgarians, man, what a surprise package. Absolutely. I mean, Risto Stoichkov was
I think, I guess we know about Risto Stoichkov, but we didn't know about the rest of players behind him.
For me, the standout in that team, apart from Risto Stoichkov, was Balakov. Balakov was brilliant. Yes. And Lechkov, I think. Those are the two, if I had to single out, no, both really, really stood out as really, really good players in that tournament.
Mm-hmm. And they had Emil Kostadinov.
Kostadinov. Wasn't he the one who knocked out France?
Yeah,
he did. And the qualifiers, yeah. Kostadinov.
All right, wow. Magical journeys. Okay, guys, Hari, who are you supporting in this World Cup? Nigeria?
Nigeria, 100% Nigeria. And then obviously once they went out, I went with Bulgaria. I went with the underdogs.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Nigeria was the team I was supporting. They had a brilliant kit as well, Nigeria, in that tournament.
Oh, yeah,
And a very, very impressive kit as well.
Okay. So, Nigeria, you've covered that. Steven, I know you're the number one Argentina fan. So, speak to us about Argentina's journey in this tournament.
We had a game together. It was Argentina and Nigeria had a brilliant game. I thought it was one of the games of the tournament, actually, if you ask me, in terms of quality. Really high quality game.
Actually, even that group was quite high quality. You know, you had Argentina, Nigeria, Bulgaria, all three teams very strong. And then Greece is, you know,
the whipping boys at that time.
The whipping boys, they were whipped.
Yep.
Well, for Argentina, I felt, you know, coming to this World Cup, they had a great chance to win it, because even though, like you mentioned, the result against Colombia was a very bad result. And because of that, they had to take a longer route to reach the World Cup, whereby they had to play a playoff against Australia. Mm-hmm. But going into the World Cup, I was pretty confident that they can do, because you look at the team up front, you had Batistuta and Caniggia. You had Maradona behind them. You had Simeone and Redondo anchoring the midfield. And you had
Albert Balbo also, right?
Balbo was there. And you had Nestor Cencini and Oscar Ruggeri in the defense. Mm-hmm. So in the first two games, of course, we beat Greece 4-0. And then, you know, we showed our mettle against Nigeria, even though despite going 1-0 down. Caniggia was, I think Caniggia caused a lot of havoc for the Nigerian defense because of his speed and skills and agility and all that. But, you know, as when the last game against Bulgaria, I remember waking up in the morning getting so excited about the game. And then there was this news going around about what happened to Maradona, which till today I stand by that it's just Joe Havelange and FIFA way of saying that, no, you can't win the World Cup this time. My country has not won it for 24 years. We're going to do it this time. Out you go.
Conspiracy.
It is what it is. So, you know, of course, when we lost to Bulgaria 2-0.
Okay, Steven, sorry to cut you there. How did you know? How did this news start filtering into you? Because, of course, back then we didn't have internet, no Twitter, nothing. You know, how do you know about it?
I mean, it was already being in the news itself, because it was a 7:30 fixture. Mm. Even the host or the local commentators who was in charge of that game itself was already sharing this breaking news update that's coming out of US at that time. So basically, when everybody woke up on that day, they knew what happened to Maradona in the World Cup. And the defeat against Bulgaria, obviously, you know, the morale of the team going against Romania wasn't very good, because you lost your best player, the guy that keeps everything together. And then Caniggia was injured in that game against Bulgaria. So it was quite a very depleted team. I think the coach at the time, Alfio Basile, had to reshuffle the team by pulling in a 20-year-old Ariel Ortega in place of Maradona. Mm. I think he had to put Balbo up front in place of Caniggia. Credit to the team, despite, yes, you know, we being undermanned against an overwhelming strong Romania team, we didn't have our Maradona, they had their Maradona. That was the difference. Mm. If we had our Maradona, their Maradona can go back home. Among my word. So that was the difference, basically. Aji was the main difference, because at the time when we scored the second goal, we were actually pressing very hard for the equalizer, but just couldn't get it. But you know, to me, it's definitely the most exciting game of that World Cup. The best game, I would say, in USA 94.
And that was also one of the first shocks of that World Cup. Romania knocking out Argentina.
Actually, I wouldn't say it's a shock, because to me, Romania going to this World Cup, I felt that they were very underappreciated, they were underrated, because if you look at the profile of the teams, we talked about the names earlier, the Dumitrescu, Pepescu, Haji, and all that. It's actually a very solid team. It's actually a generation, you know, one solid team that is coming of age, that is ready to take on the world. And they already showed it in Italia 90. This was their chance. This was their moment, really, to step it up big time. And they did it.
Okay.
Talking so about Haji, I just have to say that was one hell of a goal he scored against Colombia as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Goal against Colombia. Yeah, that sums it up. And that brings us nicely to my next point. Standout players. Not just standout players, characters as well. Big characters that we found in this World Cup. And big moments. Hari has already mentioned about the unfortunate demise of Andres Escobar after his own goal. That was certainly one of the moments of that World Cup. Standout players, anyone that you have not mentioned, we have not mentioned yet, Steven?
I think when it comes to moments leading to the World Cup, we need to highlight Diana Ross' penalty miss in the opening ceremony. I don't know whether it was a deliberate miss or just a poor skill of kicking the ball, but it did split the goalpost into half. So, what I think the most memorable...
to come.
Most memorable opening ceremony in the World Cup.
Yep.
And it was also a sign of things to come. So, yeah.
Can I just say, one of my moments, man, it lives on till today.
Oh, yes. Bebeto.
The Bebeto celebration, which today was an iconic celebration, isn't it, against the Dutch. That was a moment. Bebeto was a brilliant player at the tournament. And then, if you haven't, I think we've mentioned...
Baggio partnership, it was fantastic.
Yeah, we mentioned Baggio. We mentioned Stoichkov. I think we didn't mention Baggio enough. He was unbelievable in that tournament. He single-handedly took Italy to that final. Obviously, he missed the penalty, which is what they always talk about. But he single-handedly dragged the Italians through the knockout rounds, right, to the final.
Yeah.
One of my all-time favorite players. So he was awesome. And I thought Romario was brilliant throughout the tournament.
Romario, yeah.
So those were some of the stats. Of course, Haji, we spoke about. Carlos Valderrama, although the Colombians... didn't get out of the group. I thought he was iconic as well with that hairdo.
Yeah.
A couple. Saido Wairan, you got to give him credit. Scored one of the goals of the tournament. Branco scored that free kick against the Dutch, didn't he? The third goal to win the game against the Dutch. Some of those standout moments, man. Rashidi Yekini, I'm going to bring that moment up again. The first ever goal that Nigeria scored in the World Cup. That celebration is iconic as well, where he just literally was crying and grabbing the net, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's also... Oleg Slalenko, 6 goals in a game.
Yeah.
How can we forget Roger Miller, man, scoring a goal in the
42 years old.
42
that
years
that
old
game had ever. That game had 2 World Cup records. Slalenko scoring 5 goals. And Miller scoring being the oldest player to score in a World Cup.
But that was enough, right, for Slalenko? 5 goals in one game, top scorer of the tournament.
He tied with Risto Stoichkov, I think.
He's tied with Stoichkov, but I think... Did Stoichkov get the eventual award? I think Stoichkov did get the eventual awards. Don't think it was shared, right?
I think Slalenko had gone back by then, that's why.
Yeah, he had gone back, because the Russians were also quite disappointing. I expected more from Russia, actually, to be honest.
I think the Russia came into the World Cup with a lot of dressing room issues because many of the key players were not... Yeah, many of the key players did not pay respect to the coach, Pavel Sadri, and they did not... Many of the key players didn't turn up. So it's a very depleted Russian team that came to USA 94.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention this guy. I mean, he had arguably the most outrageous, colorful uniform on the field. Jorge Campos.
Campos.
Yeah. We talk about Manuel Neuer being a sweeper, keeper and all that, but he was doing it, man, back in the days. He was doing it already.
And also the way the Mexicans sang the national anthem with their hands across the chest iconic.
Yeah.
And I'm going to draw your attention to 2 elbows. One is Leonardo against, was it Tab Ramos?
Yep.
Yeah, that was nasty. Then the other one was Mauro Tassotti against Luis Enrique. Italy got away with that, I got to admit. So those were 2 nasty moments there.
But eventually Tassotti was suspended, right?
Was suspended, yeah. But
I think through video review or something, right? The first player.
Also, talking about that, the first time a goalkeeper was sent off for handling the ball outside the penalty box.
Pagliuca.
Yeah, and this was also the first World Cup where the back pass was implemented. So you cannot pass back to the goalkeeper and he collects it with his hand.
Yeah.
So that was a refreshing change, wasn't it? That back pass rule.
I think we need to highlight the fact that, you know, all the quarterfinals were equally outstanding games. There was no boring game. All the quarterfinals. Whether it's Baggio's magical comeback in Spain, you know, the Brazil-Netherlands, don't need to say. I mean, you know, the Netherlands was, back from 2-0 down and Branco's stunning goal. Romania, Sweden was end-to-end stuff. It could have gone either way.
Yeah.
It could have gone either way for both teams. And then, you know, that Bulgaria surprise against Germany.
Mm. Oh, yes, that's another surprise. Bulgaria against Germany.
Just a couple of other players you mentioned. The Dutch had a good side there, didn't they? They went out to the eventual champions. But I thought Bergkamp, the young Bergkamp, was excellent. The tournament scored against the Brazilians. I thought Mark Overmars, I think eventually he won the young player of the tournament as well.
He was very young
at that time. And he went on to have a brilliant career as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Dutch had a good... Aaron Winter. Wasn't he from Inter Milan?
Lazio. I think at that time it was Lazio. He didn't join Inter yet.
Yep.
And what about the Germans? Defending champions in the World Cup. They bowed out in the quarterfinal. So that was one big shock as well. Any standout players from the Germans?
Stefan Effenberg.
Mm.
Going out of the World Cup with a finger.
In typical style.
I'll throw Jurgen Klinsmann in line.
Yeah, Jurgen Klinsmann had a good World Cup.
He had a good tournament.
Yeah.
I think it's the first World Cup that we were introduced to the brilliance of Matthias Sammer.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And the Swedes, the three strikers that they had, Thomas Brolin, Martin Dahlin,
and Anderson. Yeah.
I think they had a young Henrik Larsson as well, isn't it?
Correct.
Very young Henrik Larsson as well, for the dreadlocks,
And that was also another good players that we didn't mention, standout players. I mean,
from Thomas Brolin was in the team of the tournament. Had a brilliant World Cup, and then only for him to go and fail miserably at Leeds, right? So it was that was just very interesting.
Yeah, he was one of the standout players in the tournament. There's also Thomas Ravelli in goal.
Yep.
Madman.
Kenneth Anderson, isn't it? Striker.
Yeah, Kenneth Anderson. Tall striker. Yeah. Okay. So, and Steven, actually, you mentioned this, which is what I'm going to talk about next, the jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
Memorable jerseys, a lot of memorable jerseys. Hari spoke about the Nigerian one. Steven talked about the Jorge Campos' jerseys. I think his jerseys were designed by him, right?
I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So, Jorge Campos designed his own jerseys. So, that was really, you know, unique. Which other jerseys that caught your attention? I quite like Germany's jersey.
I thought the Americans had a good jersey, actually.
Oh, the Star Spangled Banner design.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it will fetch in today's market, but to me, it's the most iconic design from that World Cup.
Mm. As an Italy fan, of course, Italy jerseys were nice.
I kind of like Argentina's away jersey as well, the dark blue. They only wore it against green.
Yeah, that one was nice as well, true. Any other jerseys that you felt were iconic?
I think most of the Adidas designs from that World Cup, in terms of the cutting and bagginess of the jersey from that World Cup, probably because, you know, I don't know whether it was a deliberate attempt from Adidas, because the fact that the World Cup is being held in the United States of America, I think they try to make it look more like an NFL jersey. Because you can actually imagine the players, you know, if they had their helmet and shoulder pad on, they probably would look like American football players.
Uh-huh.
So that's one thing that I just, when I, as I was going through review back the World Cup, I seemed to notice that, you know, this probably has never been spoken before. May share it now.
That's a very good point, right? Never noticed that as well. I've got to start noticing that the next time I watch any videos from this World Cup, USA 94. Okay, from the jerseys, let's go to the final. You guys know, of course, I support Italy. So my team's journey to the final, of course, both of you have summed it up that it's all due to the brilliance of Roberto Baggio that got to the final. And I think Italy, in large extent, relied on him, which we showed. But actually, Italy had a really good squad at that point in time, really top quality players all across the pitch. And Franco Baresi missed, I think, second game onwards. He was missing for Italy. And when he returned to the final, I just watched the final actually maybe a couple of months back, the full final from first minute all the way to the penalty shootout. Because when at that point of time, when I was 10 years old, it was schooling day when the final was on. So well, by the time I woke up, it was all the penalty shootout already, the start of the penalty shootout. And, you know, I saw what I saw. But a heartbreaking start to the morning on that Monday morning for me personally. But watching back that final, I think Franco Baresi had a fantastic final.
Yep.
Completely snuffed out Romario and Maldini as well. Had another good final. And I think a lot of people speak a lot about, you know, Baggio saving Italy, but I think a lot of other players did quite well. Those midfielders behind him, Dino Baggio, Donadoni, Albertini was the Pirlo before Pirlo. And I felt Italy's best performance was actually against Bulgaria, because Italy has a knack of, you know, reaching the peak at the right time. They don't perform very well, and then they start slow, and then when people underestimate them, that's when they will stun you. So I felt they played well against Bulgaria. That's the best performance. But unfortunately, Baggio picked up a hamstring injury. And in today's day and time, you know, you can't imagine. You picked up a hamstring injury and you think, okay, that's it. You know, you're out of the final. But he made it to the final, played the entire final with one leg, and he changed strapping in every half that they had. And he tried his best, but not meant to be. So that's my take of Italy's journey to the final. But you guys, as neutrals, watching the final, wasn't the best final, of course. What do you make about the final?
This is a typical final, isn't it? I mean, in general, you get finals like that. So nothing surprising. I think that both sides cancel each other out. You rightly mentioned Brazil were probably the favourites going into the final. But Baresi, Maldini did a brilliant job on Romario, Bebeto, and the star-studded Brazilian attack. So they snuffed each other out, I thought. Nothing much to talk about in terms of chances as well. And then it went to the iconic penalty shootout and the iconic miss by Roberto Baggio. Now, that's what you remember the final, but I don't remember anything else about that game, to be honest. I think there was nothing else worth remembering about that game, apart from, obviously, Baggio's miss.
Steven, yourself?
Well, when it comes to Italy-Brazil, you know, it's one of the classic World Cup fixtures. I mean, these two teams, they have plenty of history between them.
Yeah.
So, you know, going into the final, obviously, you know, there's so much at stake, because one of them could be the first time to win the World Cup four times.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a
record. They both won three, weren't they?
Yeah,
they both won three. At that point, I think both Italy, Germany and Brazil had three.
Brazil, three, yep.
So, you know, this was a huge opportunity for either one to win it for their fourth time. I thought it was a very tactically balanced World Cup final. And yeah, of course, you know, at that point in time, I felt, you know, there's nothing much to talk about. But now looking back, I can understand why both teams took that pragmatic approach. Because if you remember, the World Cup was played during the hottest time of the year in the US.
Yep. Yes, I was going to talk about the heat also, yeah.
So it'll be suicidal for any team, for that matter, to go playing, you know, hard-pressing game, going attack right at the goal. It will be very suicidal, because if you concede, chances of you wanting to come back into the game could be very, very tough. It won't be an easy approach. So I think that's the reason why both teams decided that, you know, they will try to take their chances as and when it arises and in the counter or whatsoever. I used to think that this Brazil team was a very boring team as compared to all the previous other Brazil teams that have won the World Cup. Mm. But I can understand where they were coming from at that point of time, because going to this World Cup, I think Brazil decided that they will play a pragmatic game, simply because they've been trying for 24 years to win a World Cup. They've been doing it beautifully all the time, but it just never happened. I think this was the World Cup where they decided that they're going to do it the other way. And it was the first time Brazil debuted in the World Cup with two holding midfielders, both Dunga and Mauro Silva.
Silva.
But one thing people need to remember, that these two guys, you know, they're not a typical holding midfielder. They are brilliant passers. They read the game very well. And it was a very balanced Brazil team, very underrated Brazil team, in my opinion. So, obviously, you mentioned Baresi. You know, I didn't realize he actually missed out throughout most of the tournament.
Yeah.
Only now I've realized that he actually came back up just in time for the final, and what a game he had. Most players would not be able to put up that kind of performance, especially when you're coming up against a striker like Romario. But he practically put Romario in his pocket for that whole game. So, and of course, the penalty shootout. I mean, what can I say? Roberto Baggio was the cure that I needed in order to enjoy the World Cup after Argentina's exit. And seeing what happened, of course, you know, it was heartbreaking for me. Mm. Heartbreaking because he single-handedly brought them to the final and had to be the one. The one that supposed to blow up Italy's chances in the final.
Yeah, but actually, in theory, Italy already missed two. Baresi and Massaro.
Exactly.
Already...
I don't know why he always highlighted for that, but the Italians were losing in the shootout, irrespective of whether Baggio scored or not, actually. Yeah.
If he had scored, they've just gone on to the last kick for Brazil. And if they had, Brazil had scored, that's it. Brazil still have won it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But good point you brought up on the heat. Throughout the World Cup, watching it, didn't you feel, even from far away, you didn't feel like it was a very hot World Cup?
Yeah, it was. I remember in the reading papers, you know, I don't know which team was that, South Korea or what, they had to bring truckloads of ice into their training session just to keep themselves cooling. Because it was in the most, you know, it was the most humid time of the year in US. So, you know, I think this is something that we can anticipate 4 years from now in 2026 as well.
Mm. And also, that this also is another important point that maybe people don't appreciate or realize today, that in those days, teams were only allowed to make two substitutions. So imagine the final Italy-Brazil. They're only allowed to make two substitutions. The match lasted 120 minutes in that heat. So kudos to all those players that played in that final.
And the 100,000 people inside the stadium, because there was no cover at all.
Yeah.
Some dignitaries were there.
Basking in the sun. So, you know, this kind of things you don't get in today's football, you know, because nowadays, in that kind of heat, you probably have a water break in between the halves.
Five substitutes.
Yeah, five substitutes, cooling break, so you've got time and players to rotate with.
Then you get an extra substitute as well if it goes to extra time.
I think also if you have a player that's been knocked out by concussion,
you get another substitute as well.
You know, nowadays it's probably easier than what it was back then. So kudos to all those players that braved that heat and played in that World Cup and gave us a spectacle. Right? Steven, before the show went on air, you wanted to speak about legacy. So maybe you can expand on this point, on the legacy of this World Cup.
Well, to me, this World Cup was definitely a unique World Cup. I mean, if I were to pick the best World Cup that I've watched in my lifetime, that putting aside your favourite player, your favourite team, you know, that kind of biasness, I will always look at USA 94 as one of my favourite. Because if you were to go back to the early 90s, and you brought this up earlier, you know, soccer or football doesn't seem to exist in the mainstream, at least on the mainstream level, in the United States at the time. And believe it or not, America was the sole superpower because the Soviet Union collapsed and they were exporting all kinds of stuff to the world, whether it's in the form of entertainment, movie, TV series, music, pop culture, fashion. They're exporting everything. They had a dominance on the world. But somehow or other, the beautiful game wasn't seem to be a part of it. Strange, but it's true. So for me, that World Cup, I would say, is a very, very important World Cup in terms of where soccer is today in USA as compared to where it was 24 years ago?
Yep.
Sorry.
So 28 years ago? 28 years ago.
28 years ago. So, you know, you can see that. Yeah. So you can actually see that, you know, with the launching of the Major League Soccer a few years down the road and the fact that how important it is for America these days to actually qualify for the World Cup. Because when they missed out the last one in Russia, you know, the reaction among most sport personalities, pundits and all that on ESPN, on their own ESPN, Star Sport and whatever, NBC and all that, it was so very clear that had this happened, you know, that back then, maybe if they missed out Italy at 90 or what, nobody would have cared. Nobody would have been bothered. But but that World Cup to me was a turning point in terms of how soccer became the sport it is today in that country. Obviously, and that World Cup, you know, of course, we had the first World Cup in Asia, we had the first World Cup in Africa, but this was unique because this was like FIFA throwing the dice, their last ever dice in trying to make soccer a popular sport in America. They've been trying for so many attempts. You know, the North American Soccer League failed, even though they had Pele and New York Cosmos. I think this was FIFA's one last attempt trying to see whether can soccer break through in America. And I think it's fair to say it eventually did. And because of the success of that World Cup, I think FIFA has finally realized that, you know what, we can take this tournament to outside of its comfort zone. It's always been held in Europe and Latin America. We can take it to so many other places. So it's only a matter of time, I think, you know, if this trend continues, we will host one, definitely.
Yeah.
It's just when, like, basically. Yeah. It's going to happen. It's just when.
Yeah, that's true. I'll be really excited if we are going to host the World Cup. But, I mean, in that sense, for us, we are all football man people, right, in this part of the world. Whether it's, you know, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, all of us are football mad as it is already. So we are all crazy about football. But it's just that our national teams are not at that level that you'd expect to be competing at the World Cup. So yeah, that will be an exciting change. Exciting World Cup if it's ever hosted here. A good point, Stephen, you brought out about the legacy of the World Cup and that it has created. Now the final thing I'm going to speak about with you guys, it's always the classic World Cup 11, the USA 94 11. What you guys got, man?
So I've gone. Let me go with what I've got. Some surprises in here. I've not gone for the traditional, maybe the some would say the best players in the tournament in their positions. What I remember them by is what I've gone with, basically. So I've gone with Taffarel in goal, actually.
Okay.
I've gone with Taffarel in goal. I thought he was a brilliant goalkeeper in general. He won the World Cup with Brazil. And then in defense, I've gone with a 3-4-3 formation.
Okay.
So in defense, I went with Branco, firstly at left back. And again, it's because of what I remember him by. I remember him by that stunning free kick against the Dutch. He was a free kick specialist. And he brought that extravagance from set pieces for the Brazilians. So I've gone with Branco.
Branco did a banana kick before Roberto Carlos.
Exactly.
That free kick was there.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a banana kick, yes. And then I went with Paolo Maldini in the middle of the back three. I mean, that explains itself, I think, Maldini. And then I went with someone who's probably a surprise. I was going to go with Baresi, actually. I was contemplating Baresi. But again, Baresi only had that one big game. I thought in the final, he missed a lot of games. So I actually decided to go with Alexis Lalas. Because the American side of things, he was unique. He had this long hairdo. He had this beard. He got the U.S. He was instrumental in getting the U.S. out of the group stages as well. So I've gone. And they only lost by a goal to nil against the Brazilians as well. So I went with Alexis Lalas. And then in midfield, I went with Dunga. I thought he was outstanding throughout the tournament. And back then, you know, I mean, now we look at it, we say he was a holding midfielder. But back then, there was no such thing as a holding midfielder.
Yeah.
You're a box-to-box midfielder.
Yeah.
And Dunga was a proper box-to-box midfielder. So I went with him. I went with Krasimir Balakov for the Bulgarians because I thought he was instrumental for the Bulgarians as a creative midfielder for them. I had to go with Georgi Hagi because, like I say, he always gets in my top 11, one of my favorite players of all time. Very skillful, got the Romanians where they were, scored a classy goal against the Colombians as well, memorable goal. And that last one may surprise you, but I went with Maradona. I'll tell you why, because as a 10-year-old, that's the first time I saw Diego Maradona.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah,
that's the only time I've actually seen him, in a match or in a couple of matches. And even though he only played two matches, he was outstanding in those two matches, Maradona. So for me, he has to go in there just for that. And the effect it had, right? The moment he was out of the team, the Argentinians were gone. So yeah, I mean, I had to go with Diego Maradona there. And I think the front three picks itself. I don't think you can go any other way with the front three. It's the divine ponytail, Roberto Baggio. It's Romario, and then it's Risto Stoichkov. I don't think you can go any other way than that front three. I think they were the top three as well, isn't it? For the best players in the tournament.
Yeah. And also for the Ballon d'Or as well. And in that year, yeah. Correct. True. Correct. Stephen, what do you got?
Okay. I'm going with the 4-3-3 formation. For me, my goalkeeper is Thomas Ravelli. And in terms of defense, right back, Giorgino. Left back, Paolo Maldini. Probably my centre back pairing is going to surprise you guys. But okay, I'm sharing it now. Patrick Anderson.
And
this particular guy, I don't know whether you still guys remember his name or not. He also had a very signature look. Trifon Ivanov from Bulgaria.
Oh, yes.
Ivanov.
The late Trifon Ivanov.
Yes. Yep. And then in my midfield, it's similar to Hari, which is basically Dunga, Krasimir Balakov, and Hagi. And up front, you know, again, you can't go wrong with those three, Romario, Roberto Baggio, and Stoichkov. Although I think, you know, I would, if if Argentina had gone a little bit more further, Batistuta would have got into that first 11, in my opinion. Yeah. And the coach, I don't know if you wanted a coach for this team, Russ, but I'm going to go with Arrigo Sacchi. Because to me, I think even though Italy didn't do as expected well having a coach like him, but let's be honest, the man was a revolutionary tactician. One, you know, he was way ahead of his time when it comes to the idea of hard-pressing, possession-based game and all that, all which was never spoke to much about back then. But when you think of all the coaches today, whether it's Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp, Sacchi was doing it back then with his AC Milan team.
Yeah, true, true.
Yeah, but, and that, outstanding,
yeah, and that point also, whenever I look and look back at Sacchi at Milan and then hear his comments nowadays, whenever he makes any comments, I think if only whatever his, you know, his idea is worked for Italy. But I guess he had also an approach and the way he wants to approach things with his style, implementing his style and all, could be a bit difficult at the national team level where players are coming from all different clubs. You don't have much time with them and some of them have their own set ways and, you know, it's difficult to mold them in such short period of time. So that's probably why it didn't work out as well as you would have expected. But, I mean, getting to the final is still good enough. But, I mean, for a country like Italy, they would want to win the final, not just to get there. So that's the mentality of a big team. Okay, talking about Maradona, I got to say, if Maradona had not got suspended, I think Argentina would have gone far in the World Cup because they were frightening. And when Maradona was playing, I think they were frightening. They were really looking strong and good. And they were, you know, a lot of flair in their play and they were scoring goals for fun. I think that was one point I got to make about Maradona. And there's something, some player that the two of you have not mentioned is the goalkeeper of the tournament, Michel Prudhomme. Yeah. He had a good tournament as well. And the Belgians had another player, Enzo Schifo.
Enzo Schifo.
Yeah. So this was before this golden generation of Belgium that we speak about today.
I think we forgot to talk about another team. The team that which caused the first problem for Italy in that World Cup, surprisingly.
Ireland.
The group stages.
Yes.
Ireland. Yeah, Ireland. Ireland.
Did you guys know that when the World Cup draw was made, the fact that it was going to be held in New York, and Italy and Ireland in New York, tickets were snapped up within 20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, because they had a lot of the migrant Italians and Irish.
New York, you had a very large Italian community. And then, you know, right across there, Boston, you had a huge Irish community. So they were, I mean, both teams were practically at home.
true. And I mean, at that time, that final, I remember people like Paul McGrath and Roy Keane and all quite happy to have kept Baggio quiet in that game because he didn't perform. But I think I remember Baggio also going into that first game. He was also playing with an injury. He had an Achilles tendon injury and he wasn't really fit. I remember it was stated in newspaper that he had this injury. He didn't know. I mean, at 10 years old, you don't know what the hell is an Achilles tendon. But then in the newspaper, they were drawing it out for you. Okay, this is your Achilles tendon. This is where it's injured. And then you're like, now you know. So yeah, I remember that as well. Of course, I mean, those who do not know, Baggio is my all-time favorite player. And USA 94 is special for me also because of that reason. My favorite team got to the final. Of course, it was heartbreaking end. And my favorite player had a really good tournament. But again, had a heartbreaking end. But yeah, largely good memories and all the surprises all along the way. The underdogs doing well. I think that one aided that memory. And of course, your first memory is always the most special, right? When it comes to World Cups. So that's that for me.
We talk about the Colombian team. Wasn't that Colombian team? Didn't it have Faustino Asprilla?
Asprilla, Adolfo Valencia.
Yep. Rincon, Freddy Rincon.
Freddy Rincon, Carlos Valderrama. I was quite excited to see Colombia, actually, because that 5-0 win over Argentina was all over the newspapers. So that caught my eye. And then I was like thinking, okay, let's look out for Colombia in this World Cup. But they were really disappointing. But that was one of the biggest disappointments of the World Cup.
I think there was a lot of issues behind the scene. I think the team was going to the World Cup with tremendous pressure, having been threatened by some mafias back at home. So they weren't really in the best condition going into those games.
Okay.
You know, their life was at stakes and all that, with too many, you know, all these other factors that came in. And of course, with Pele predicting them winning the World Cup, all, you know, the bad smoke back in their country basically is putting large sum of money, betting money on them to win the World Cup.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a tragic story, basically, when I think of that Colombia team and particularly what happened to Andre Escobar. I don't know whether you're aware or not, Russ, but he was actually going to join Inter Milan after the World Cup.
Oh, no, I wasn't aware.
Yeah, he was actually on the verge of joining Inter Milan after the World Cup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that was something I didn't know. So, something I learned new in this episode then. Thanks, Steven, for sharing. Any last words, guys? USA 94, excellent tournament.
No, man, it brought back great memories, man. Made me feel like a kid again. That's what I was right back then. Great memories. And I think that World Cup is iconic, man. I mean, not just because I saw it for the first time, but you just think about it, the moments. You talk about the sad issue with Escobar. You talk about Roger Miller. You talk about Oleg Salenko, 5 goals in a game. You talk about the Bebeto celebration. You talk about, Roberto Baggio and the way he dragged the Italians all the way to the final. I mean, there were so many moments, the Rashidi Yakini moment, Maradona, and what happened to him.
His celebration against Greece was iconic as well.
Absolutely iconic
as well, right? So I think there were so many iconic moments, good and bad, off and on field, drama with that World Cup. There were lots of surprises. I mean, think about the number of surprise teams that were going into 2 in the semifinals alone, right?
Mm.
It could have been a Bulgaria-Sweden final.
Yeah, it could have been.
That's
right?
What it could have been, right? All in all, a fabulous World Cup, man.
Yeah,
certainly.
I think we never spoke about Bolivia going to this World Cup.
Yeah,
That was another fantastic generation of players.
Marco
Echeverri, of course, being the focal point. I think there's another guy called Jamie Moreno, played for Middlesbrough, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they were in the same group as South Korea, isn't it? South Korea and Germany and Spain.
I mean, the South Korea-Bolivia game, I remember the game very well because the injury time went all the way to 10 minutes.
Yep.
It was the boring game in the World Cup. Boring game.
Yep.
And also, they kicked off the World Cup against Germany, Bolivia.
I think there's a lot of expectation that Bolivia, you know, hoping what happened with Cameroon 4 years ago, people were hoping that Bolivia can, you know, spring a surprise against Germany. But I think Echeverri got sent off and then they were playing 10 men. And I think shortly after that, Klinsmann scored. Yeah, it was game over for them.
Mm. Okay. All right, guys. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. I think it's been wonderful. We probably could go on for another hour.
I just throw one more thing in, man. It's one of the World Cups that didn't have England and France.
France were like, especially France had like a very talented generation that missed out this World Cup.
They lost out to the
Bulgaria.
It was a Gerard Houllier-led French team that lost out in the final seconds to Kostadinov, isn't it? After that, wasn't it Ginola was thrown out of the team after what he did?
He was basically single out for that loss, for that missed pass.
Correct.
And England were knocked out because of I think they had
Holland knocked them
and
out.
Norway and a Norwegian team.
A
Norwegian team coming of age with a lot of players who are actually playing in England.
Mm.
So it's basically England B knocked out. You can say England B knocked out England.
Yeah, there were a lot of Scandinavian players playing in England at that time. So Sweden had some, and then Norway had some. So, yeah, England were...
Overall, I would say the jerseys for this World Cup, I mean, it pretty much, in my opinion, it's... in terms of the colour, the designs that we use, it's pretty much, you know, showcasing the vibrant thing about what was it like living in the 90s. A colourful and such, you know, probably one of the greatest time in human history.
Correct. Yeah. True.
Agreed.
And I'm still looking for my Italy jersey. If anyone, you know, can get me a really good replica, at least... I'm going to buy. So just let me know. Anyone listening?
Replica depends on what category, bro. 3A?
Yeah, correct. True, you know? I've bought it like probably 2-3 times and I've not been very pleased with what I got. So I'm still looking. I could even if it's authentic and it's not too costly, I might even buy that. So
just try to look at Classic Shirts, the UK website.
Hmm.
It's called classicshirts.com.
Yeah.
It might cost you a lot, but if you are willing to invest, splash,
if
go ahead.
Have some spare cash at that time of the month or year in that year,
something
yeah.
Like
yeah, correct.
I think there was wait a minute. There was no the US jersey wasn't there. There was one of the teams. I think they had an Argentina 94 team, the blue and white stripe. It costs about, this is in British pound sterling, GBP, 94.99. So that says a lot why I'm not interested, why I can't buy at the moment.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks a lot once again. It's me, Ras, signing out. Cheers. Peace out.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
You're here in love.